Tom Gimbel joins us on the Wintrust Business Lunch, the founder of LaSalle Group. Welcome back to the show, Tom Gimbel.
Always good to be with you, John.
How's hiring going to be impacted? That's your bailiwick with the situation of the world's economy right now.
I think we're going to see a pretty good slowdown. It might not show up on the jobs report for a couple months or so, but what CEOs don't like is uncertainty. And I think there was a belief, I know there was a belief coming into the Trump administration that we were going to have deregulation and that would be a gangbuster full speed ahead for businesses, which would have really been helpful for hiring. And with uncertainty, you got a couple different situations going on, John. Number one, you don't know what's coming, so why hire? Number two is if, in fact, this leads to a recession, you'll have layoffs. If companies are going to lay off, why hire people now when you can hire people at a lower salary 3 months from now?
The expectation was that it would be good for business because of fewer regulations. The tax policy that's in place now would be renewed. Maybe there'd even be more tax cuts. That would all be good. But the president was signaling tariffs were part of his plan. Maybe we didn't take him seriously enough. Maybe we couldn't have done anything about it anyway. But it's not like we didn't know tariffs were coming, right, Tom?
Well, 100%. I think sometimes people move to judgment too fast. I consider myself a moderate, and I heard from a lot of people on the far left saying, this just shows he's wrong. It's been 3 days since the market's dipped. And then today it's back up 600 points. I said, let's just hold on and everybody stop cheering either victory or catastrophe every minute of every day when something happens. However, when it comes to hiring and full economic recessions or downtrends, nothing lasts forever. And what this shows is that we may have long-term growth, we may have long-term recession, who knows? But the problem today is uncertainty because the president seems to not do exactly what his cabinet says will happen, and that creates the uncertainty and the volatility.
I wonder what that means for employees or employers then. If you got a job, keep it. If you're looking, you better compromise your expectations a little bit. Would that be fair to say?
Yeah, I guess to an extent. I mean, John, you've heard me say this a couple times over the years, is that if you're really good and you're a top performer, you really have nothing to worry about. If you don't, if you're not career focused, if you're not a go-getter, if you're not somebody who's at the top of your peer group, then yeah, when there's a recession or a slowdown, there are things that can be scary. And I think right now, we used to talk about quiet quitting and people would leave voluntarily for no reason without another job. Now's not the time to be doing that in this market.
Well, as I recall, quiet quitting was you stopped working, but you didn't tell them because you were remote and you were still taking the money. And you were turning in a minimal amount of work until you got caught. Was that quiet quitting?
Yeah, I guess you're correct on that. So I wouldn't do that right now. I wouldn't do that ever. But I think to get caught on something, you know, now's the time. You know, I'm a big believer in, as you know, in work ethic, and that demonstrates character. But if you were kind of unsure if this is the career or the job for you, and you were kind of just waiting in the shallow end, I would tell you that you don't want to be doing that. I'll screw up my metaphors and say, you know, you don't want to be without a chair when the music stops, and you don't. And this is where, you know, having people know what you're doing, contributing in meetings, getting your work done, being ready to go, those are the things that are important. And at the same time, keeping up your network and being in touch with people. It's really time to be dialed in.
The job expert and founder of the LaSalle Network, Tom Gimbel's on the line. I'll quote you to you. You wrote, if there is one good thing about this turbulent economy, your work ethic and attitude are more important than ever before. You actually start that piece with this. One person working 8 hours is not the same as another's. In the office or remote, it doesn't matter. Everyone doesn't work at the same speed, same attention to detail, and same quality. If I'm on a treadmill for 30 minutes at 3 miles an hour and a 2% incline, and all you ask me is how long I was on the treadmill, my answer would be 30. Meanwhile, someone else is on the treadmill for 30 minutes, going 6 miles an hour at a 6% incline. They, too, were on it for 30.
I'm saying that sometimes we are afraid to admit how hard or lack of hard we're working, and we've got to be realistic with ourselves, and that's what differentiates people. And so if you're not pushing yourself hard every day, are you fulfilling your obligation on the social contract with your employer? And in turn, if things get tough, who are they going to keep? They're going to keep the person that's going harder and faster. Yeah. And you know, I use the analogies in our personal lives all the time. But if you got two babysitters and one does the dishes and one cleans up, in addition to having the kid like them and taking care of them, you keep that one over the one that leaves the house a mess, even though the kid likes them. You got to take some pride in what you do. You've got to earn your keep, and you got to push forward as fast as you can and work hard. There's something to that. It's called a work ethic, John. That's what this country was built on.
I think there's some people that hear that and say, I bust my ass for 8.5 hours for the company, and I'm not going to do it for 12. And if you do, fine. But that doesn't make me a bad worker.
That's not what the Post read, John. That's not what you read. I said the same amount of time. And there's people that go and they show up and they say, I was here for 8 hours or 9 hours or whatever it is. But they're not going as hard as they can. They're lollygagging. They're on their social media. They're doing their laundry at home. Or quite frankly, they just don't push themselves to be efficient and go quickly.
How do you account for some people run faster? Some people are faster runners. Some people are smarter or just better workers. And I don't know how you account for or score that.
That's absolutely okay. So admit that and say, I'm going as fast as I can. And guess what? There may not be a place for me on this team. And I might have to find a team that doesn't have that same caliber of people or doesn't prioritize the same speed or effort. And I'll be on their team. And I write that through the post on LinkedIn. And that's the key, is to acknowledge that, is that the best wide receiver in college isn't necessarily the best wide receiver in the NFL. And it's the same thing in work. You might have been a great student in college. You get to work, the same level of output. You're not even an A player or B player at the company. And it's about time we just have a big boy and a big girl conversation and wake up and say, that's okay. But don't expect the same money and don't expect the same leniency and the same flexibility, because you're not as good.
The next sentence in your piece does say, to say everyone does what they're capable of isn't true either. We can all push ourselves more. Some choose to, some choose not to. But I think you're also acknowledging that some people are just capable of more. And it's also maybe incumbent upon an employer to recognize, it depends on what we're talking about here, but if that person is sufficiently competent but not as good as somebody else, that doesn't mean they're a bad employee, does it?
No, it absolutely doesn't. But if that, listen, this goes back to the sports analogy or personal training or a teacher. We've all worked under people, whether it's for money or in school or what have you, that's pushed us and gotten more out of us. That's called great management, great coaching. And to think and say that we're always doing the best we can or what we can is really just a lazy person's way out of saying, I don't want to find out, or I don't care enough, or the company's going to fire me one day anyway, so I'm not going to give it my all. You know, all this BS that we've heard for since the dawn of social media, quite frankly. And when the economy gets tough, those people are going to be in a little bit of trouble. And you got to find a different place.
What tips do you have for employers to get the most out of their people without, you know, wrecking them?
Yeah, I think number one, what companies really, where they lack, and it is a two-sided coin, where the companies lack, John, is they have to invest in management training. You can't just hire somebody or promote somebody and expect them to be a great manager of people. It is an art more than it is a science, but you can teach how to do that art and how to coach and how to interpret what people are saying and how to ask open-ended questions and find out what's going on in people's lives that impacts their output. There is a lot companies can do that they don't do, and that's not fair either.
Yeah, I'm glad you said that as well. I think that, I don't know if that's an EQ we're talking about, but I do think a measure of sympathy or empathy is helpful to a manager, right?
Absolutely. It's so important for for companies and people. Listen, but the key thing is, John, managers are just people the same way as employees are. And if they don't have a good example or good teaching on training them how to interpret people and their feelings and what they say and how they do things, how are they going to be successful? And it's up to companies to spend X amount of hours per week, per month, per year to develop people to be good managers and good leaders of people. It's hard. Management is the hardest job because you have to corral people of different mindsets in order to get them together to achieve a goal. And if employees need that, some are self-motivated, many aren't. And you've got to figure out how to get the most out of them. It's a challenge. And companies need to step up to the plate as much as employees do.
Writes Tom Gimbel, I'm not criticizing anyone. I'm purely pointing out there's a difference. And if people don't admit there's a difference, that's the root of the problem. Everyone can give what they want and accept the consequences of their output. Just don't be mad at the person who goes faster and longer and harder. You think there is some of that? People looking over their shoulder going, oh, please, you know, slow down over there.
All the time. I guarantee it. I've seen it firsthand. I've interviewed people. I've talked to people. I read about it. The people who criticize, if no one was going harder and faster, there'd be nothing to criticize. This is why people say, oh, employers are taking a pound of flesh, because people are working hard and a lot of people want it. They really do. This is still the land of the free. People voluntarily show up at work, and some go harder to make more money, to be a pleaser, to do whatever it is,
yeah.
And other people don't want to. And so you know how I stop being told to work hard and having to do that? By getting other people to not want to do it. And that's a bunch of malarkey.
Well, as always, the texts are pouring in here, Tom. Let's review some of them, shall we? Tom always tells it like it is. I love him. 847, thank you, Tom, for telling it like it is. Most people are afraid to do it. 815, yes, thank you, Tom, exclamation point. Well, that's all the time we have, Tom.
Hey, the Cubs are playing well, and I get a few nice texts. I can have a happy day.
That's Tom Gimbel. He is the job expert and founder at the LaSalle Network. Thank you, Tom.
Always good to talk to you, John. Do well.
Steve Bertrand. Steve wants to say hi to you. How are you?
Hi, Steve. Yeah. Hi, John.
Dennis Rodkin is here, residential real estate reporter over at Cranes. Steve hosted this show for years and worked with you regularly on it, as well as other projects. And so you and Steve go way back, right?
Way, way back.
Who is your favorite? Me?
Oh, you, John. You are my favorite.
Steve Bertrand. You know, if you were smart, you would say Pete Zimmerman because he books the show.
Can I say Spike Odell?
No, you cannot. Dennis Rodkin is the residential real estate reporter at Cranes. What's job one for you today? So is that all of this market turmoil impacted real estate too?
You know, not yet. It seems likely to. The primary impact, I think, we're seeing a little of now and may see into the spring is hesitance by consumers because there is so much uncertainty. I have a story out coming out in a few minutes about tariffs and the housing market. And the biggest thing almost everybody started with when I called them was, well, you know, we don't know where this is going. We don't know where this is going to settle. And so a lot of it is just waiting to see. One of the things that I think is hardest to predict right now is, will interest rates come down? Interest rates have been relatively high for a couple of years while the Federal Reserve tried to fight inflation, started coming down, not a lot, but started coming down in 2024. And now the question is, will they continue down? And if they do, will it be because we have headed into a recession and unemployment is rising and the Fed is bringing rates down for that reason? Or will they come down because the president has pushed the Fed successfully to drop rates? I have a count of two so far, but I think there will be more. Two times since unveiling the tariffs that President Trump has said on social media that he wants interest rates to come down, that he wants the Federal Reserve Chair to bring them down. Or will interest rates go up because the tariffs unleash inflation to go even higher, as you've discussed, and the Fed uses higher interest rates to try to pull down inflation? We don't even know where interest rates might go in the wake of what's going on. And we also don't know where the larger economy is going, so I may just decide I was going to sell my house this year. Maybe I won't. I was going to buy a house this year. Maybe I won't. That's really it. This uncertainty is just circulating in every household that has a decision to make.
Jay Powell is standing pat for now. And I think at first I thought interest rates would go down, but I could see why they could also go up here. Is there any building consensus about the direction it's going to go that you're hearing?
I haven't seen one. No, I think almost everything I read says they could go up or they could go down. and
well,
we do know, though, that the president has said twice now in less than a week that he wants them to come down. Of course, the Federal Reserve is insulated against the president exercising any influence over interest rates, but we don't know we don't know what is in the future.
Well, the president has a bully pulpit, and every institution in American life over which he does not have direct control does seem to capitulate to his will.
Exactly.
Now, will Jerome Powell do that? I suspect, I don't know the end of that sentence. Like you said, it's hard to say. But I would like to think they would do what is in the best economic interest of the country.
But let's look back 2 years, John. You know, the housing market was exploding. I guess this would be 3 years. The housing market was exploding in 2022. The Federal Reserve says, inflation was overall as well, and the Federal Reserve says, we're going to ratchet up interest rates in order to slow all this chaos in the housing market. They jacked them up, and I think you and I might have talked about it on the air. One of the things that real estate agents started saying, it spread like a virus, is they would say, marry the house, date the rate. The idea being interest rates would only stay up for a little while. So you buy the house now, and then a little while later, you're going to refinance. But interest rates have stayed relatively high. They've gone up. They've gone down. They're down a little bit from where they were a year before. For most people, not really enough to refinance. So back then in 2022, the idea was, interest rates will come right back down or come down some pretty soon. That was incorrect. And so here we are again saying, who knows what interest rates will do? Interest rates are not the only influence on the housing market, but we know in large part because the first 20 years of the 20th century had such low interest rates,
right,
that
right,
we're now in this sort of echo period where they really do have a big influence.
I think we were coming to a point where we accepted 6 or even 7% as still a fair rate to borrow money to buy a house.
Yeah.
But everything is in such turmoil right now, it's hard to know what to make of that number. And I see that right now the Dow is up 200 points. It was up higher. And if today was going to be a day of correction, maybe it won't be the way the market's been trending since it opened higher today. 200 is very modest compared to the length it has to go. And I'm wondering if this entire episode since last week is just that, an episode. And that if the markets recover, trade deals are cut, China will be on the periphery, but the rest of the world will continue to do business with the United States. In that scenario, I wonder what happens then to the residential real estate.
Well, yeah. So if people are sitting out because there's uncertainty and then they see certainty,
a new normalcy evolves.
Yeah. If we think, so this is where we're going to be over the long term.
Yes.
Then I may go forward with my plans to buy or to sell or to build or whatever it is. What you really need is some good news that sort of shocks consumer confidence upward so that people think we're going to move ahead this way, whatever that way is, and it feels good to me, so I'm willing to make one of the biggest investments of my life, if not the biggest investment of my life.
But I forgot the number now. It surprised me the other day how many people buy a house with cash versus borrow. It was it 38% of the people play for a house with cash? It might have been higher than that.
I believe those figures are higher in other cities than in Chicago. I'm pretty sure, if I know the report you're talking about, Chicago has a smaller proportion, in part because our homes are so much more affordable, and in part because our appreciation has been so slow compared to other cities that we haven't built the giant home equity accounts that we can then pick up and move to another house paying cash. I don't have the big nut that I can move to that next house.
Well, eventually my son's family is going to get big enough that he's going to have to buy a house. And eventually my parents are not going to be here. You know, the time will accommodate some of these needs, right?
Oh, yeah. Life cycle needs are one of the biggest drivers in the housing market.
Interest rates be damned.
Yeah. Remember, I don't know if it would be your parents, but my parents in the 70s bought a house with a 14% interest rate. We haven't seen anything like that in decades, but people were buying houses when interest rates were in the teens. And now we're arguing about now we're discussing the difference between 3% interest rates and 6% interest rates, which over the long term are both low compared to that 14.
I think
they peaked at 18%.
Sure. And just when this is the point I was trying to make a moment ago, and just when we started to acclimate to that,
mm-hmm.
this crap happens,
yeah.
You know, and then suddenly you don't know if you're going to have a paycheck. And then everybody is on pause again.
And one thing we should consider is right now is really the beginning of the big home buying season. Spring, even though it doesn't feel like spring outside today, spring is the big home buying season. And I feel all this uncertainty. So am I going to say, well, I'm just going to let spring pass me by and buy next year? There are a lot of questions hanging overhead.
You wrote he left Chicago for Arizona in the late 1990s, but when Bret Hart Sr. built his Scottsdale mansion, he filled it with two things that reminded him of the city by the lake: Michael Jordan sneakers and Chicago common brick. What's this story?
This house is insane. So this is a guy who had a temporary staffing agency in Chicago. He moves to Arizona in the 90s. While living here, while he was in Chicago, he had season tickets to the Bulls. I actually found old newspaper articles where he was talking about the Bulls. He was talking to the Chicago Tribune about his season tickets. Anyway, he moves to Arizona. He makes a fair amount of money with another staffing agency. And he builds this gigantic house. One of the things that's getting a lot of media attention is the 290 pairs of Michael Jordan sneakers, some of them worn by NBA players on game day. He spent about $400,000 building this set of sneakers, and he's selling them with the house. The house is now priced at $18.5 million. It came on the market at a Michael Jordan-like number, $23.5 million, from Jordan's jersey number, though I don't think that was intentional. But the other, so that's getting a lot of national attention as well as attention here. But I think the piece that really sort of seals the deal for Chicagoans is he had truckloads of Chicago common brick, that multicolored scraped brick that we see all over Chicago.
Yeah.
He had that shipped out to Phoenix to build this, I think it's a 20,000 square foot house.
No, it's 21,000.
It's 21,400.
Sorry,
I misremembered. I wrote the story days ago. And when you look at the pictures, you see the Chicago common brick isn't like a little souvenir. It's a primary building component of this house in Scottsdale, Arizona, which I got a real kick out of just because, I mean, how much more could you say I'm from Chicago than shipping out trucks of bricks,
right,
and then filling the house with Michael Jordan sneakers?
A W flag would have been cheaper, but no, he's got money to spend. 5 acres, 21,400 square feet. And not 23 million, but 18 and a half for 19.
Yeah, now 18 and a half. Cut the price.
Okay, we'll pick it up here in just a minute. We're talking with Dennis Rodkin, the real estate reporter at Crane's Chicago Business. Here's another business update from Steve Grzanich.
Start your timer. It's time for the Wintrust Business Minute, sharing Chicago's business news of the day. Walgreens Boots Alliance had a good quarter. The company reported profit that exceeded expectations, and its share price rose. This is likely one of the Deerfield-based company's last quarters as a public company. Last month, Walgreens agreed to be purchased by Sycamore Partners for $10 billion. The deal is expected to close before the end of this year. Adjusted earnings per share rose, driven by cost savings and improvements in the company's healthcare business. Walgreens also withdrew forward guidance ahead of going private. The Federal Reserve Bank of Chicago president says anxiety is very high among business leaders over tariffs. Austin Goolsbee says those leaders are worried the tariffs will cause widespread supply disruptions and make inflation worse. In an interview, he says a global trade war could return the U.S. to conditions seen in 2021 and 2022 when inflation was out of control. Goolsbee says the tariffs have made navigating the direction of the economy more challenging. The Fed has been holding on interest rates and had previously projected 2 rate cuts this year. I'm Steve Grzanich, and that's your Wintrust Business Minute.
Now the business of food. Here's Steve Alexander.
Yeah, thank you. And it's time to check in with an Illinois corn farmer. And how are things down on the farm these days?
We have a lot of economic stress right now.
Yeah, a bumper crop of stress.
Inflation factors really raised the prices of our input costs.
Waterloo, Illinois corn farmer Ken Hartman, who's also president of the National Corn Growers Association, he says not only have corn prices been about half of what they were just a couple of years ago, in the fours since September of 2023.
Machinery's went up, interests are high, fuel's high.
Luckily, President Biden and last year's Congress left behind a lovely parting gift for farmers. More about that after I thank the Chevy Silverado for sponsoring us today. There has never been a better time to put a Silverado in your toolbox. Find out how at ChevyDrivesChicago.com. Farmers, as we know, are by nature resilient.
We had bad yields, we could make it work. If we had bad price, we could make it work. We're getting hit with bad yields and bad price.
That's a wheat farmer in the Kansas drought zone, but even with the combo of good yields and bad prices, farmers are hurting.
Every year we ask our farmers to put their livelihood on the line to continue to do what they do best, and that's produce the food and fiber of the world, but let's give them some backing.
And that is what last year's Congress and President Biden did. $10 billion. For farmers, and now is the time to apply. If you don't, you won't get paid. The program is called ECAP, the Emergency Commodity Assistance Program. Brooke Appleton is with the USDA.
These payments are based on acreage and not production. And then for acres reported as prevented plants for 2024, ECAP assistance will be calculated at 50%.
And the checks will be issued as the payments are approved, with a caveat.
The initial payments will be factored by 85%. And that's really just to ensure that the total program payments do not exceed available funding.
If you want in, if you want some of this money, you need to go online and apply. The website is fsa.usda.gov. You'll find a calculator and
the list of eligible commodities and per acre rate.
The website again is fsa.usda.gov. From the farm to your belly, it's National Empanada Day. I'm Steve Alexander. That's the business of food on 720 WGN.
Dennis Rodkins here, the residential real estate reporter over at Cranes, and we have just a couple of minutes. Let's do two celebrity real estate sightings. Ex-Cubs pitcher Kyle Hendricks, Southport Corridor home on sale, huh?
Put it on the market on Thursday, and it was under contract to a buyer by Sunday.
So is this an example of interest rates be damned if you are a cash buyer? The turmoil in the world isn't impacting you so much.
Well, or you already got your mortgage commitment and you know that his asking price is $2.55 million and you know, I can get this and I want to swoop in because there is so little inventory. This is a house in a great neighborhood, walking distance to Wrigley, which obviously would benefit a player for the Cubs. And you've been house hunting for a while and this comes on the market. It looks really sharp. It's priced to sell. They're not asking a big inflated price. They're not asking much more than they paid for it. I think you might swoop in. It could also be a question of interest rates be damned, but I think my guess is that you've been shopping real hard. This one comes on the market and you say to your agent, get me that.
It's a nice house, but it's not this sprawling mansion because it's in the city. There's just, those homes don't exist, particularly at $2.5 million, but I presume that's a cash buyer?
Don't know. I won't know until it sells, until it closes. We won't know what it sells for.
Are Walter Jacobson's, is it a condo, a co-op sold, right?
Condo on Astor Street went under contract quickly. He too. Walter, of course, has been in broadcasting in Chicago for more than six decades. And it was fascinating to me, John. A lot of times I can't reach these celebrities when they're selling. But he and I spoke about a different home of his, one in Beverly Shores that his wife, when she died, left to Paws here in Chicago, and they sold essentially as a donation. And so we had spoken last year about it. So when this came on the market, he was willing to talk to me. And it was fascinating. You know, he said they bought it about 10 years ago. It had been in one owner's hands for something like 40 years, needed everything. She redid it. It looks really sharp.
I'm looking at the pictures.
And he loves the location. He said, you know, it's so funny to talk to a guy like Walter Jacobson, and he says, I love it because I got the Jewel, I got the Walgreens right here, walk to. And I thought, yeah, you are a Chicago guy. It wasn't, I've got these super fabulous restaurants I can walk to, which is also true from his location on Astor Street. And as you might know, he's in his late 80s. He just celebrated his 87th birthday last summer, moving to a senior living facility not too far from there. Said it was a little bittersweet because he loves the location, but again, he's only moving a few blocks away. He was asking more, cut it to about $1.15 million, and it went under contract very quickly.
Yeah, somebody's getting a nice place here. And what a nice pedigree, Walter Jacobson's place.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
And she did a nice job. The pictures, I hope, do it justice. They look great.
Yeah, it looks really good. His late wife, Susie, redid the home, and it looks really good.
You'll see it at chicagobusiness.com. Crane's Chicago Business, residential real estate reporter. Okay, Dennis Rodkin, it's always nice to see you.
Thanks, John. This was fun.
Yeah, it always is.